delayed by a number of factors, and including some interaction we had this morning pertaining to some of the functions in Parliament. Today, in terms of the agenda, we are supposed to be discussing the oversight visit that we've recently held, but I will explain what's going to happen there. And the second issue would be the briefing by the department on the implementation of Mine Health and Safety Act. But before we do that, we have a couple of new faces, and as a result, an introduction will be in order so that we can attach names to faces. My name is Fred Gona. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee, representing the African National Congress, and I will request the honorable member on my left, and then we'll go all around, everybody who is here introducing him or herself.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Linda Moss. I'm the member of this portfolio committee from the AFC.
Good morning. I'm Frida Machibela, member of Minerals, Resources and Energy. Thank you.
Lucas, member of the committee.
Member of the committee.
I'm Faith Bikani, member of the committee representing the ANC.
Lindwe Zikalingobese, from Anglo American South Africa.
Vern Kleinsmith from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
My name is Mzwandi Jamakula. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Minister of Mineral Resources.
Zakhele Samwane, Parliamentary Office.
Thabo Gazi, Chief Inspector of Mines.
David Mziza, Deputy Chief Inspector of Mines.
Philip Dexter, Member of the Committee for the Congress of the People.
Eric Marie, Member of the Committee from the DI.
Andrew Schmidt, Member of Committee DI.
Fanny Mushwana, Member of Committee from the ANC.
Johnny Ramrock, Secretary to the Committee.
Thank you very much. As I have indicated, the committee section, in as far as the oversight report is concerned, is still at a drafting stage. I'm told it's at an advanced stage. Confirm that, Johnny. And once it is ready, we will then prepare for it in the program, so that we can be able to engage on that report. Suffice to say that I want to really appreciate the members who have been on the trip, who were able to make it. They were very helpful in the process. And I'm sure also, as it was an eye-opener for me, it was an eye-opener for them. And the cooperation of the department, as well as the cooperation of the companies that we have visited. I would be saying this, that on behalf of the committee members that went, we didn't receive any hostile treatment in any of the areas that we have visited. There was maximum cooperation. But I think then our views will be reserved for the day when the report is ready and when it is tabled before us, so that we can discuss and then approve the recommendation. On the subject matter that we are going to be dealing with today, the implementation of the Mine Health and Safety Act, I think all of us are aware and equally concerned that the number of accidents, both injuries and fatalities in the industry, is escalating instead of abating. And after the tragic death of nine people in the Impala mine, there have been the usual one case in a particular mine, two cases in other mines. There was also an explosion, gas explosion in the KZN, in northern KZN in Friday. The irony was that whilst the members of parliament were in that vicinity, the message came through that there was this gas explosion in that coal mine. But because it was not our responsibility at that point in time, we have allowed the department and the relevant people to immediately go in there and deal with the situation. So it is on those bases that we felt that we need to then have this interaction, listen to the department in terms of what is it that they're doing, understanding very well that they are still very new. The separation of mineral resources from energy, I'm not sure if it is already completed, but the indication was that it would be completed by the end of August. Be that as it may, we would want to see what measures are being put in place to deal with this scourge of the fatalities, and to what extent is the department using the tool that is at their disposal, that is the Act itself, understanding those constraints in terms of them still setting themselves up. So without further ado, let me hand over to the department with that understanding so that they can take us through painting this picture, and then members would engage with the input. Over to you. Is it going to be you, Mr. Gazi?
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members of the committee. It's a pleasure for us to come and present to you the implementation of the Mine Health and Safety Act, and also cover a brief review of progress we are making, and also a reflection on the challenges that we are facing. And maybe just a brief feedback on the Spring Lake ignition that the chairperson mentioned. 18 workers were involved. It was a methane ignition. The investigation is underway to understand what led to the ignition, because initial reports were saying there was blasting, but in reality there was no blasting. Something ignited the methane, and 18 workers were involved. The miner in particular was severely burned, 80% burned, and he subsequently died out of the 18, but other employees, 17, are well after that incident. And it is because of this incident that last year we saw the need to review the legislation to strengthen sanctions and to really encourage employers in our mineral sector to comply to legislative requirements. A bit of context: the Mine Health and Safety Act was drafted in 97, or promulgated in 97, after the Judge Leon report, commonly known as the Leon Commission report, which recommended the rewriting of health and safety legislation in the country. As we will be aware, prior to that, Mineral Act, the licensing legislation, was used also to deal with health and safety legislation. So the Act was promulgated then. So we had a sufficient time, 10 years, to really implement the legislation. And we were fully aware of the gaps, the challenges. And as we put it before the committee last year, was that in many aspects, our legislation is fairly progressive. It requires employers to conduct risk assessment. It's problem-centered, problem-based. Whatever you do, you have to assess the problem, train, and put measures to control the risk. However, where employers fail to comply, it was very limited in the sanctions that can be applied. And in that context, a need was seen to review the legislation. And that's what we seek to present this morning. Slide number 2 just covers the content. I noticed on the printout it's repeated, but we'll spend a bit of time talking about health and safety performance, looking at the performance from 2003 up to where we are, because it's important sometimes to look at that long-term duration. The problem of health and safety is the one that will require a lot of effort, research work, policy intervention, and the improvements will be incremental. It's important to really note that. And as a consequence, we included that slide that shows over time how are we doing, and we will zoom in to last year and also the year to date, how the sector is performing. On the health performance, it's last year data, because that information comes from the annual medical report that companies submit to the department. But we've provided some information that will help. And after that, we will go to the background, the amendment of the Act, and what the department is doing to implement the legislation. Just looking at health and safety performance, I will request David to assist me with a discussion on health and safety performance, and I'll take over when we come to the legislative aspect.
Thank you, Mr. Gazi. And good morning, Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. The slide, as indicated as slide 3 on the projector, it indicates the fatality rate per million hours worked for the coal mines in South Africa from 2003, as it has been indicated. I think you'll actually see that there's been a gradual improvement in terms of the fatality rate from 2003 up to the end of 2004. And it appears then that there's not been a significant improvement. However, there's an indication that from 2008, with the coal mines, there's been...
Is there a possibility of increasing either the font size of that slide? Because the document itself is unreadable, and I don't know if members can read the scale there. Can it not be maximized more than what it is now?
No, we won't be able to do that. Chair, what we can do is maybe we can provide printouts of this later, but we're not able to increase it.
I think if we also look at the numbers, if I can assist with the numbers, in terms of the fatality rate in 2003, It was averaging, it was at 0.46, and up to the end of 2008 is 0.26 for the gold mines. For the platinum mines, I think the platinum mines comparatively did had a significant reduction, as you can also see with the red trend line there. From 2003 also to the end of 2007. However, in 2006, but from 2007 to the end of 2007, there's not been a significant improvement. However, since last year, we have noted a substantial improvement as well in terms of the fatality rate. This slide basically shows the main contributors of accidents, what we refer to as agencies, are mainly on the injuries. As you can actually see there on the slide, there's been 11% improvement year on year between 2007 and 2008 on the injury rates that have been reported to our department. Most of the accidents occurred as a result of fall of sorry, most of the injuries occurred as a result of fall of ground incidents and also general type of accidents. However, I must mention that there has been also an improvement on both of the injuries that I've been referred to. With the fall of ground incidents, it includes both rock burst and rock fall related accidents. There's been about 26% improvement. With the machinery type injuries, there's been a 41% improvement. And the conveyance related incidents, there's been a 28%. And the rest is indicated on the slide as well. Thank you. Now, similarly with the fatalities and its rate as well, we had about a 29% year-on-year improvement in terms of fatalities between 2007 and 2008, and the fall of ground-related fatalities were reduced by 32%. Machinery-related fatals were reduced by 75%, and also the conveyance incidences or fatals were reduced by 24%, as indicated on the slide. However, now if you look at the current figures, this slide basically shows the injury incidents reported to our department for 2008 and 2009 for the same period to the end of the 24th of August. For both years, you can actually see that with the total injuries, there's been a 14% improvement, and mainly experienced with the gold, coal, and the other sectors. However, the platinum sector, we have not yet seen any improvement in terms of injuries. And with the fatalities, up to date, there has been 113. Fatalities this year compared to 110, and the improvements were mainly experienced within the gold and the coal sectors, with 15% and 31% respectively.
These figures are current. That's what is happening. Currently, and the worrying factor, obviously, platinum, which led with the 9 fatals that took place at Impala Plus, skewing the figure, and also other mines, smaller operators, are beginning to become a problem. Diamonds and chrome and other smaller operators, we noted even last year. So 64% regression on other mines, and platinum 30% regression.
Thank you, Mr. Dudley. This slide shows the total diseases as reported by the mines through the annual medical report as required by the provisions of the Mine Health and Safety Act. For 2007 and 2008, if you can... most of the diseases that have been reported between 2007 and 2008, 2007 indicated in yellow and 2008 in red. Now, most of the diseases that have been reported are mainly the pulmonary TB or tuberculosis cases in the middle. You can actually see there. And also noise-induced hearing loss, as indicated with the first graph, followed by silicosis as well. And thirdly, asbestosis. I think with asbestosis, we no longer have any asbestos mine in the country. However, the latent effect of exposure to asbestos, I think this really clearly shows that. And I think we also have cases of silica TB being reported. Thank you. And I think this basically shows a profile for a similar sort of profile for the coal sector, and also for the platinum sector. Would you like to also comment on this? Now, what we've done as a department, because most of the fatalities that are being reported are mine-related accidents that occur. So what we've done, we've collected information from the National Institute of Occupational Health in terms of the ODIMWA, which is the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act of 1973. NIO is requested to collect the respiratory organs or lungs and do pathology tests on those lungs, all those lungs of the previous mine employees or the mine employees who died or the ex-mine employees who also died. Now, I think it's an interesting slide that we wanted to really to show the profile. In orange, the bar indicated in orange indicates the respiratory diseases or the number of people killed as a result of respiratory diseases. And the bar indicated in blue is the mine accidents that we collect information on. Now, if you look for the period of between 2003 and 2007, and I think the NIO NIO information comes from their annual report as they publish. So there's not been a 2008 report, and we have the 2007 report there. But if you look on average, although there's been a reduction, a gradual reduction, but on average, the number of people killed by the respiratory diseases is four times the number of people. It's about four times the number of people killed by, on a yearly basis, killed by the mine accident. It's a powerful slide. It also says to us that we really have to also, although we are striving to do that, to put more emphasis on the health issues as well. Although they are not in our face, however, there is a need that we should gradually put an effort on health issues as a collective. Thank you, Mr. Gerber.
Thanks, David. And maybe just a comment on that slide. And I made this comment previously. The levels of death that we see here because of occupational illnesses are failures of 10, 8 years ago. And what we're failing to do now will show in the next 8 to 10 years. And that's why managing exposures, managing the risks at operational, preventative enforcement approach is very, very, very important. Because when it comes to health, when people get ill, the system has failed them already. And we're actually looking at failures here. That talks to our work going forward. Minister has made it very clear that we need to pay particular attention on health, focusing on health, because it imposes a huge social burden on the economy that is struggling to grow. Next slide. The following slide, I've just indicated just few areas where we are busy conducting research to help us to address the problems that we are facing. We have a program of research, I think it's a 5-year program, that looks at elimination of silicosis, really dealing with exposure, how you improve technologies to make sure that people are not exposed to silicosis and as a consequence getting ill. And we've seen on the illnesses graph that silica is linked to TB. And TB also we know is linked to HIV/AIDS. So just creating a whole complex mix that certainly needs to be managed. So there's a research program there. I think it's 8 million research program that looks at eliminating silicosis. And we have another program, elimination of noise-induced hearing loss. When we look at the illnesses statistics, we've seen that particularly on the gold mines and platinum, two of the major illnesses is noise-induced hearing loss. And silicosis, particularly on the gold. So we have a program of research that focuses on elimination of noise-induced hearing loss, looking at new technologies and also equipment that employees can use to address the problem of noise-induced hearing loss. There's also a program of rock fall and rock burst. As we will be aware that over 50% of death in our minds are caused by rockfall, rock bursts, and seismicity. And there's a huge investment in that area to help us address the challenges. And let me just jump to the last one. Trackless mobile machinery, secondary to rockfall, major agency that causes death in our sector. It's trackless mobile machinery, equipment running over people in confined space, underground, even on surface, these big trucks. So we have a whole program that looks at trackless mobile machinery, how you improve safety in dealing with this major huge equipment. And then currently we've started a research program that looks at developing a health and safety culture framework for the South African mine. Other countries have gone ahead to a limited scale, I must say. If this work comes out successfully, we'll be a leading country in developing the kind of framework that we're talking about. Because many times when you deal with health and safety questions, people have raised the issue of culture in our mining sector. Our managers, mining leaders, owner, taking the safety of employees seriously. And that you see through incentive schemes and programs that are run at mines. This work has started, and I think it's work that's long overdue, because when you look at the Lyon Commission, there was a whole chapter dedicated to the problem of culture, health and safety culture in our mining industry. And it's stated as one of the objectives of the Act, although the Act didn't really go into specifics on how you need to do it, but it said we need to promote. It's one of the nine objectives of the Mine Health and Safety Act, to promote health and safety culture in the mining industry. So we have work going on to develop that framework to support that. So that covers health and safety performance and the initiatives that are underway to address the problems. Turning our attention to the implementation of the Mine Health and Safety Act, just a brief background of what happened last year. The Act was introduced on 16 of May, or the bill was introduced 16 May. It was actually published in the Government Gazette for public comment. 2nd June, the bill was certified and submitted for parliamentary deliberations into parliamentary processes, and the bill was finalized in November, approved by the National Assembly unanimously for assent into law. And there was a bit of a long waiting period, 5 months, and then the bill was signed by President, or assented into law, on the 16th of April this year, 2009, and it was proclaimed coming into effect on the 30th of May. And just those 2 days, we're talking about implementation. Just to emphasize that it was the legislation was signed this year, proclaimed in May, and the plans really for the year were already underway. But we'll talk about the initiatives that we're doing to implement the legislation. Now, just looking at the Act, I've just highlighted the key amendments. There were many other amendments that were necessary. However, the key amendments that we will take the committee through was Section 10, dealing with training in the mining sector. Employer investigation, Section 11.5, and then permanent committees of the Mine Health and Safety Act, I think it's Section 41, and then health and safety management system. This was a new introduction of a new subsection under the functions of the chief inspector in pursuant of improved health and safety, to develop a health and safety management system for the country. Many times when we come to the committee, we've had to deal with the question of how many of the mine workers that are dying who are South African citizens, who are foreigners, who are contractors, and often we are not able to provide that information. And some of these challenges really relate to systems. So it was identified as a necessary function to be able to do the work effectively. And then administrative fines simplified and increased, and also offences in the Act were extended to cover a number of issues. So what I'll do now, I'll just go into details of some of these key amendments. What was the rationale for the amendment? A number of committee members are new, and I think it's important just to look at the rationale why it was important to effect those amendments. Section 10 deals with the aspect of training at mining operations. Basically, Section 10, subsection 2 says if an employer introduces a worker into a working environment, the employer must know what are the risks associated to health and safety, and the employer must train the worker on those risks, on how to deal with those risks. Even if he goes to leave, when he comes back, he must be retrained for him to work in that particular space. But more often, with our investigations and inquiry, we found that employees were not trained. And when you ask the question, employers will say, no, we have trained. And you say, where are the records? No records of training. But the poor worker sometimes is even dead. He can't speak for himself. So the amendment here in the section was necessary to force employers to keep record of their training, so that we show that the legislation requires training, and that training is actually done, so that people can proactively take necessary steps to also protect their own health and safety. And then the section dealing with investigations, this section was deliberated for a long time. Section 60, I must say up front, Section 60 of the Act allows inspectors, that is government, to conduct investigations. And I think Section 70, inquiries, Section 72, 71, I think, inquiries. So where there's a death, government has to conduct an inquiry and an investigation. However, Section 11 also empowers employers to conduct an investigation when there's a serious injury. And the purpose really is for employers to know what led to the failure so that it's addressed and we're not repeating the same problem. So this section was introduced. In fact, it was there, but this report was not shared. And what we were saying here was that employers need to submit that report. It needs to be done within a particular time frame, because the thinking that was that we can learn from those accidents and stop repeating, repeat accidents, having the same thing happening over and over and killing workers. That was the idea. Next slide. Section 13 of the Act. When the Act was promulgated in 1997, it was really an accommodation for the sector, because there were no occupational medical practitioners in the country. So nurses and general practitioners, that is just ordinary doctors, were allowed to do their work dealing with occupational health at mines. Now the amendment to this section was to say we've had 10 years, people have been enrolling and qualifying as occupational medical practitioner, so we want the health of workers at our mining operation to be vested in the hands of qualified medical practitioners. So that was the amendment. Exit medical examinations. The Act requires employers to conduct an exit medical before you release an employee. If a service is terminated, you need to examine them. Are they healthy? Are there compensation issues? And deal with those issues. But the Act didn't specify when that medical examination is supposed to be done. And often what the problem was here was that employees were released and they will go back into their rural communities without exit medicals being conducted. And much years later, they will come back and say, I contracted an occupational illness, I need compensation, and there's no documentary proof. So the legislation is basically saying to employers, within 30 days of service termination, you have to conduct an exit medical. So I think that was the provision that caters for that. The council committee, there was a slight amendment there. The Mine Health and Safety Council, if I can just briefly explain, is an advisory body that advises the Minister on health and safety legislation. There are 15 members on the council, five from organized business, five members from unions, and five members from the state department. And they meet quarterly to look at health and safety challenges, and they will provide technical advice to Minister on areas that need regulation. The council was established in 1997 as an advisory body, not as a governance structure. In 2003, the council was declared as a public entity by the Minister of Finance because we were funding it, I think, to the tune of about $3 million for administration. So any entity that uses public funds is declared as a public entity on that basis. And that declaration of council as a public entity brought huge governance responsibilities for a small advisory body like that. And there was a complication in that because this body was an advisory body, it has got three committees. In the Act, the functions of those committees were clearly spelled out. And the problems we are starting to pick up was that when council say to committees, do some of the work, I mean, you can understand representation in these committees are really interest groupings in the sector, business, labor, government. So when people were comfortable with doing certain things, they will just look at the law and say, but our functions in law is this, we can't do that type of work. And I remember 2 years ago, I actually requested one of the committees. I chair council. So we said to the committee, do work for us on illegal mining, how we deal with illegal mining, 2 years ago. And the committee came back and said, it's not our business. In law, this is what we can do. And we can see how big a problem of illegal mining has become. So we had to amend the Act, remove those functions from the committee, make them responsibility of the council as a governing body, and the council will then, through terms of reference or whatever, delegate those responsibilities to the committee as and when it deems necessary. So as the rationale says, it was really to improve governance and effectiveness of the council in providing that advice to the minister. The next slide, Section 47 of the Act was also amended to establish the inspector as a juristic person. And really the rationale there was to help the inspector to deal with the capacity challenges that has been besetting it for a number of years. And when we talk about implementation initiative, I'll just reflect on the new developments around the issue. Next slide. Administrative fines. The challenge with administrative fines was it's one of the sanctions in the legislation. When an inspector goes on site and comes across a situation of non-compliance, which does not pose immediate danger to employees, obviously he could issue an admin fine. And that admin fine was set at a maximum of 200,000. And companies just don't pay those monies. Increasingly what we had to deal with was files and files from legal counsel on why they shouldn't pay it, because companies just saw it as admission of guilt. And the other challenge here was that when this section was introduced, a procedure of how the officials deal with issues of fines was written into the Act, which really created the whole problem. It will take us a year or two just to deal with a single fine. So we needed to simplify it, just say issue a fine and make a provision for a guideline to be developed that will guide, because it's easier to change a guideline. If there are problems with enforcement, you are able to review a guideline. But if you write a procedure into law, it really becomes a problem. And that's why it was always appealed. So that was the amendment. And the fine was increased. Maximum fine was increased from 200,000 also to 1 million. We're dealing with a multi-million industry here. And if compliance costs money. If people don't want to comply, there needs to be deterrence. If you have good legislation but you cannot enforce it, it's better. It's just the same as not having any law in place. And we needed stronger sanctions to really drive employers to take responsibility to implement the legislation. And then offences. Section 91 in the Mine Health and Safety Act deals with offences, creates offences for non-compliance. But the old Act basically used to say any other person who does not comply other than the employer is guilty of an offence. So effectively, you under the old legislation, you could pursue managers and contractors and employees, but not the corporate. The corporate could just operate with impunity, if you like, because you could only give a fine to employers. So we amended this section to include employers, and the rationale was that we have a lot of foreign companies, they employ managers, and they need to give them resources to deal with health and safety issues. And if they are not accountable, they've got no reasons really to give them resources to plow into health and safety issues. So that was the amendment. So moving to the implementation initiative, I've indicated that the law was proclaimed on 30 May. It was already into the current financial year. Management met, discussed each section and the implications of those amendments on the department, on the Mine Health and Safety Council, and also on the industry. And that exercise really helped us to zoom into areas where we needed to give guidance to the regions, in areas where you needed to develop guidelines. And currently, as we speak, that work is underway of developing enforcement guidelines, of developing a guideline that deals with administrative fines. The occupational health and safety management system is also underway, and I can happily report that it's 50% underway, the development of the system, which I think will really help us to focus on the problem area. I mean, when you look around the world, regulators always have capacity challenges. It's how you better focus the resources that you have. In the absence of proper management tools, it becomes an elusive goal to really target the resources and the problems. And we think that this system will really get at the heart of driving health and safety improvement in the mineral resources sector. Workshops are planned also at regional level to popularize the Act, because issues of compliance, people have to know what is expected of them. And before the end of this year, we'll have covered all the 9 provinces, creating understanding of the new sections, what it means for employers and employees, and make sure that people are able to comply. And we've attended seminars, legal seminars, where we clarified issues and how people need to look at the new legislation. Next slide. In conclusion, I included the issue of Section 86 and Section 50. I mean, these two sections in dealing with the legislation attracted a lot of attention and discussion, and the Act was promulgated or proclaimed with these two sections suspended because the employers at the time wrote to the president to say that the sections were unconstitutional, and they were suspended for further deliberation. The Director General convened a meeting with all stakeholders. Lawyers were brought on board, the state law advisors who gave advice, and we are ready to bring those sections back to the committee for deliberation and finalization. So that brings the presentation to the end. Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Ghazi. Any additions on the part of the department? None. Members, there you have it. Let's engage with the presentation. Any questions of clarity, deliberation? I note Honorable Smith, Honorable Bigani, Honorable Nele, Honorable Matibela, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Mushwana. In that order, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I must say, you know, it's the first time I've seen a report by the department indicating the causes of the different deaths and injuries, which we've been asking for many a year, and finally it's come. Thank you, Mr. Garvey. It's appreciated. Then secondly, on your conclusion issue, is that the Section 86 and 50, which was now recently debated upon, which is So these two sections have not been put into operation as yet, and they're due to be debated by the committee again. Okay. Then there was something else I'd like to get your opinion on. I'll get you it. I'll just fall in line again with the next at the next question session. Thank you.
Would you like to react to that, Mr. Bell?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I particularly want to ask, in terms of the hospitals, I don't even say hospitals, clinics, or perhaps occupational services in the plant. How ready? What is the state? What is the status thereof, or how ready are they to fall in as being able to implement the Act in terms of, for example, their medical staff, medical resources, the infrastructure itself, and is the budgeting already in line with the medium-term expenditure? And then the other question I'd like to know, with the research work that's being done, I don't see any indication of your time frame. How critical is it for you to be able to keep to your time frame so that you can see progress in relation to where there are downfalls in the research areas? And then the program of action that you're talking about, you know, for implementation, has this program of action already been aligned to the budget? Is this program of action approved, and is it... My concern, in fact, around that is in terms of the fact that for who is the workshop, the miners, and if it's for the miners, is this Act going to be actually put at the level of the miners, especially when it comes in terms of language and understanding of the Act itself? Who is the Act aimed for implementation? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Gala.
Thank you, Chairperson. You might have explained this disease, the TB, how
how they got it from. My question is, because my understanding is you inspect them when they come in, when they start working in the mine. But there is this increasing number of this TB. Do they get it inside or do they come in with this TB? I've just forgotten the name of this sickness that people used to get it from mines. Bapumele mine, baske kaba kule ba fisting time. Okay, we welcome on this call. Yeah, it had a name. And one other thing, my father was a miner. My father, I am old, you see. But now think of my father, who was a miner. And they were complaining about this rock force. Yeah, that in the mines there is this thing that they call Ilike Eluwayo. Ilike, I'm surprised that even now you are still trying means to do away with it. By now, I'm sure you should have had something. But you are saying you are, it's on a process. This machine, I don't know this machine. You're still processing it. But by now you should be having something to avoid this rock from the Letafun Uwa. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matilda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on page 10 on the exit examination. I just want to know, because people are to be examined when they exit the mine, but what happens to the people who are being, let's say there's a strike, and those people are no longer allowed to come back? Are they being examined for exit, or what happens to them? Because they go to their various places where they come from. And about silicosis, and I want to know, are those dumps still there of the asbestos mine? Are the dumps still there? Because they are also the cause of death with the people who are living around those areas. Are they still there? And also with the mine, if the owners of the mines refuse to pay the fines and saying, no, this is unconstitutional and all this, can't it be put into the agreement or the contract that they take when they start operating the mine, so that they must know that this is what I have signed? Because now they've got ways of going, doing whatever they want to, trying to play their games and win. Thank you.
Let's take Honorable Lucas as the last on this one, and we'll come back so that they can respond.
Chairman, page 7, slide 13, the causes of death. I think what's concern here, it doesn't seem to be any improvement. There seems to be, even on the mine accident, it's sort of current for a number of years, almost the same, an average of 200. And I think that's a bit worrying, because it doesn't seem to be any improvement on the situation. And the second on 14, the hearing loss, isn't that linked to the mobile machinery accident? Because it looks like that people don't hear the truck coming or something, they may be stuck. And the other one, which is not on here, is about staff, mine inspectors. Is that situation improving? Because I know there's been a great shortage.
Thank you. Can you respond, and then we will come back with another round of questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. We've noted the questions, and I think we'll share themselves among ourselves. I'll probably just, if we look at the question raised by Honorable Matibela on exit medicals, yes, are a problem. I mean, in situations where there's strikes and people don't come back, those are some of the areas. I mean, one of the incidents that one can immediately think about was the Pamoti situation. I think 4,000 workers we were involved with trying to make sure that they get their exit medicals before they are released from the company. So in that area, it's been a problem. But I think that those are issues that the legislation is addressing now. They were a problem, and the legislation, I think, will be able to address the issues. And also the question of fines. The company is not paying. I've made a point there that we're busy developing an enforcement guideline, which will cover how you issue fines, how you stop operations, and they also cover the issue of issuing licenses. Because under NPRDA, a company's ability to comply to health and safety requirement is one of the must. It's a requirement. If we were to say to the minister that this company will not be able to comply to health and safety requirements, the minister would not be able to give them a license. So when they are failing, we should be able to go back and say, this is one of the terms and conditions of your license. So we think the enforcement guidelines will address those issues and make sure that people take their responsibility and pay where they need to. And then on the question of asbestosis and dumps, is an area that we continue to deal with through rehabilitation. Obviously, where there were asbestosis mines, there will be those exposures, and some of these are legacy problems, and you need to budget for them. I think an assessment that was made some time ago was that the rehabilitation at mines that are just left derelict will take us quite a number of years. It will cost billions. So on an annual basis, the department gets a budget of a couple of millions to deal with rehabilitation. So it will take time to deal with the issues. But I think areas which are a problem, like asbestosis, those are prioritized, and they are dealt with under the mineral regulation branch that's responsible for rehabilitation. So those are the two issues. David, I don't know if you'd like to come in there.
Thank you. In terms of where is CD coming from, you were correct that each and every employee, before they start working, they should undergo medical examination. And if, for instance, TB is detected, then the necessary measures or action should be taken, either the employer or the non-employer. But as Mr. Gaz has indicated, the challenge, I think the number one challenge that we face, if I can put it like this, is the legacy in mining in South Africa. You might be aware that, especially with the gold mine, most of the employees were staying in hostels. Maybe they might be staying 8 people per room. So I think TB as well, it has to do with the issue of living conditions, which also affected going forward. However, I mean, through the promulgation of the NPRDA and the lifestyle as well, thank you. Through the promulgation of the NPRDA, we are trying to rectify that particular challenge to make sure that through the social and labor plans that there are necessary measures that are being put. And some of the mining groups have already started with that particular, to support that particular initiative. And also I think you've also raised a critical question as well on the why are we still having fall of ground accidents? And I think if you look at the general in terms of, although there's been improvements in certain cases, we're still dealing with repeat incidences or accidents, like you have indicated. And I think, as Mr. Gadge has also indicated, through the Mine Health and Safety Council, we have put out the initiative to deal with the issue of culture of health and safety at our mines, because it's still a number one challenge to influence the current accidents and health professionals as well. And also the current legislation changes that we are putting through. We are striving to influence that culture that leads to say, because now some people, even today, they're even scared to go underground, not because of the accidents that are being reported. I think that's the legacy issues that we are really we are dealing with. And I think the issue of exit exams was dealt with. And the workshops on that Mr. Gadge indicated on, we'll strive to encompass generally every employee, including some of the officials. However, we'll also do it through our inspections and audits, because we encourage our inspectors that when they go to the mines, besides issues of enforcement, they must engage the workers. It's very critical for them to do this, to inform them of the current accident trends, the health trends, and also the legislation changes as well that impact on them. So we take a holistic approach on that particular issue. I'm not sure if you'd like to touch on the other things.
Okay, thanks, David. The questions around hospitals and clinics.
If I can address that question, the generally hospitals, I mean mines run their own clinics and hospitals, and from a resource point of view, I mean those hospitals are well resourced, so to be able to implement the requirement of the Act. In fact, with the question of TB, HIV/AIDS link, we'll know recently the Department of Health had an expert from World Health Organization who assessed the problem both in public hospitals and also at mines. And in giving us feedback, they gave us feedback that the setup in the mining industry is well resourced, and I think the question really is really monitoring and making sure things happen as required by legislation. But the setup is there. Research and time frames. It's a fair question or comment. Honourable Member, the research, we know you're searching for answers, and it's difficult. We do our research through research organisations like CSIR and Ohio University. So we regularly review the work that they are doing, and what we can learn from the work they've done, we do implement. As I indicated, some of those research are five-year programs. You need to really zoom in and see if you are able to find those answers. There was one slide I wanted to show, which I probably just forgot, but it indicates, particularly with falls of ground, a lot of our injuries and deaths, they occur between 9 and 10 in the morning. Lots of those statistics between 9 and 10 in the morning. And it's a very telling analysis and statistics, because what it's saying is that early morning examination, before you allow people into working places, is not done properly. That very powerful message that comes out of that message. It relates to training, because in the morning when you come in, somebody competent must assess the work environment and sign and say this work is safe people to go in. And once they've signed, then people can go in. A lot of our accidents happen as just when the shift starts, which means people go into areas that are probably not safe. But when you look at the records, people have signed to say those areas were safe. So it goes back to training, because research have come up with different types of support, distances between support and how, and there's a human element. If you're not applying those things, you'll still have failure. And that's why I think the culture project is a very powerful way of addressing the issue of health and safety and empowering people. And one of the things we didn't refer to the slide, through MQA, Mining Qualifications Authority, we've set a program to train 40,000 health and safety representatives. Because the whole philosophy is that they are at the working place 24/7. We're not there as inspectors. We come and go. But when you have health and safety representatives trained, and when situations are dangerous and they're able to pull people out, it improves coverage and it really helps us to contain the scourge of health and safety injuries that we see in our sector. And then the last question that was raised by more of a comment by Honorable Lucas around noise-induced hearing loss. My comment on that, it's a very interesting way of looking at it. And I think the systems that we're putting in place will really help us, because those are things when accidents happen, we need to go back into the system and say, okay, here's David, he's injured. What is his history? Did he have noise-induced hearing loss? He was run by, you know, now you're starting to make those inferences and links, but in the absence of systems, some of those things it's a very interesting way of looking at it. Underground mine environment is very noisy, contained, and a lot of people are suffering from noise-induced hearing loss, and you have this equipment moving. So it's obviously something we'll look at and try and establish the links. The question of capacity, what we've seen recently with the advertisements, a lot of individuals who've gone into the sector are showing interest to come back. However, one must note, I mean, Inspector Quest, if you look right through the history of mining in this country from the 1800s, employment has been very cyclical. When the industry is doing well, people go to the industry, and that's the time when you need to really inspect. When the industry is going through distress, people want more security, more secure work, they come to the inspectorate. So it's a very cyclical type of thing. So those will be my comments, Chair.
Thank you. Chairperson, I am covered in most of the questions that I wanted to ask, but there are still two questions that I would like to ask, and it's about understanding the work situation. When you talk of the workplace, how far does it, what does it cover? Are we talking of when the workers go down into the mine, or we're talking of them going down and where they stay after work? Because we talk of diseases that may be killing most of them, and somebody was talking of the conditions of where they are accommodated, such that I don't see where the Act, or maybe I need to be educated here, if the Act covers how they are how they are accommodated. Because people who bring out minerals, they are taking care of the economy of this country. And we need to ensure that where they stay is very comfortable. We can't just have them placed somewhere in something next to shacks while they do such a wonderful job. And their life, you know, it ends anytime, but while they are around, they need to be taken care of. So I was checking if something can be done about the act that it covers that particular section. And then on page 13, if I'm not mistaken, it's about time frames, which already it was somebody questioned that. But I see the very final sentence as maybe a desire. We would like to bring the bill to the committee for deliberations and finalization. Do we have time frames? By when? Such that I think it would be the sentence. It's not very much complete to me. By the end of this year, we know that this thing is going to be taken very seriously. But if it's left like this, it can be given to people who will come here 5 years after now. And they will still, it will still be an intention. Thank you.
Honorable Linda.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think once of all, before the last comment of the Honorable Member, I think they're always saying the working conditions, but I also was looking in the staying conditions and the healthy lifestyle. That is very important. The other point I want to raise, Comrade Chairperson, is about the training records. It's concerned me really a lot. That's why when we were doing our oversight, I was asking, I think in Parliament, I asking the question, or I raised the concern about the companies not providing the training plan. I didn't get a proper answer there. Companies must providing the training plan, then you can just better monitor. If they provide them training plan, then you can see exactly when they were giving their training, on what time and on what time frame. So, and what type of training they actually giving for the workers. I think this thing is overlapping. The health and safety and also training. And I think we must engage also the Department of Labor on this matter. Because that is also workers, that mining workers is also workers. So that we can become more serious on the matter of health and safety and about training. Because how will we actually keep the record about different type of skills if these companies can't keep record, or it's just denying we don't have the record, or the records become lost. So I want to raise this concern to you.
Thank you, Honorable Matibela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine was just a comment on what Mr. Ghazi was saying about the companies not keeping records and what. And I think, and when an accident has happened, then they say it was, they were there, they looked and all this. I think, and they want to shift the blame to somebody else. But I think with me, in my thinking, it's just pure negligence. That's all. It's not a matter of they didn't train, they didn't do what, they just they neglect their work. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues. You might have addressed it. Well, I was not in committee, but on slides 10, 11, and 12, you have a number of diseases there. The first one I can make out is noise-induced hearing loss. The second one is silicosis. The third one is asbestosis. The fourth one is ptosis, and then I get lost. Could you just take us through those different diseases? And then secondly, on page 7, the three major causes of fertility is either fall of ground, 57 of in 2008, which is about a third of the death. Then transportation and mining, which is 50, and then general. Can I just first, with regards to fall of ground,
Would this be due to lack of proper supporting systems in slide 7, or is it due to seismic conditions, or both? And then, with regards to transportation and mining, I see there's, just above that, there's machinery. So I suppose that machinery, that number there, is due to machines and stuff. Now, the transportation and mining, what is that exactly related? Because there seems to be a difference between machines and in transportation and mining. And then thirdly, what kind of incidents do you find under general? Is it, you know, what kind? This is a broad idea. Thank you.
Then you, can you respond to those?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the causes of the fall of ground accident, as I think Mr. Gaz also touched on it previously. I think one of the causes is poor examination at the working place, and also to a certain extent during our investigations and inquiries, we find that maybe the mine design as well might be a challenge. An over inspection by either the supervisors or some of the managers, to a certain extent, it also becomes a challenge. The type of support that is being used for the conditions, it also might lead to the accident. And sometimes training is, I think, is one of the key issues causes sometimes, because if people they can't identify dangerous conditions, then it tends to lead to incidents. And I think a fall of ground and seismicity as well, because that's with the underground earthquake, as it's called seismicity, there's a shake of ground and it might result in serious incidents from taking place. Now, the general type of accident, it's mainly the slip and fall type of material handling. Fall from height. You actually fall from height. Rolling material as well. It can be rolling rock. It can also injure the people.
Slip and fall.
Slip and fall.
Slip in the form of slipping through a muddy area,
yes.
Or in the form of slipping.
Yes, it's not slip like in a muddy area. Yes. So thank you, Chair. like you are saying, it can be in a muddy area. Then you slip and then you fall down. Yeah. And I think with the other ones are that you raised, the difference between the transport and mining and machinery. Transport and mining related incidences are all those incidences involving vehicles. Let's say a truck running over a person. Or it can be a car running over a person at the mine itself. And the other one, it also includes the underground. It also, especially in the gold mines, it also includes what we call the rail-bound equipment. That is local as well. If they run down a person underground, we sometimes put it under. We actually put it under the transport and mine. And machinery, it's a conveyor belt. Related incidents. Those mainly equipment that are fixed. It can be tools as well, and then we classify them under the machinery type of accident. And lastly, from my side, the occupational diseases, as you've indicated on the slide. As I indicated, if you go to, I think it's page 10 on the soft slide. I said from the beginning, it's noise-induced hearing loss, silicosis, asbestosis, cardiorespiratory diseases, TB. And the next one is pulmonary TB. And we have silica TB. And then the next one, PN. PN is mainly coal worker pneumoconiosis, but it's pneumoconiosis. And the last one is the other.
Thanks,
David. Sorry there, Chair, and members, for not including the legend. I think
we'll pay attention
to that back time. Just going back to the question raised by Honorable Mushwana on workplace accommodation, and I think followed up by Honorable Moss, issue of accommodation, very critical. You cannot, you need to look at the worker as a whole. However, it's a matter regulated under the MPRDA, because I think the question was, is there something we can do to the legislation to address this important question? We will be aware that it was promulgated, I think the Act was promulgated in 2004, and within 5 years, obviously, the minister was supposed to issue a guideline on housing or accommodation at mines, and I think it was done, if I'm not mistaken, earlier this year. So that guideline that provides a framework or standards of how mines must provide accommodation for workers. So it has been addressed. And then the question of the bill.
Sorry, Chairperson, on that point, just want to come quite quickly in. When we were actually doing the oversight, I was seeing some of blocks, I don't know if it's hostels or whatever, was standing empty and even the line to who did it, place it belongs to.
Okay, if I can also just cover that question, I think with the recent over, what is it, I'm trying to think whether it was with the oversight where the question was raised, because it's most of those properties still belongs to mine, and there's been an ongoing debate in areas where sometimes municipalities want those properties, there is that discussion. But we're busy with a project where we're looking at all the provinces where mines are, looking at those hostels, who owns them, and what is the plan? Because a lot of these things are just standing there and not used, and you end up with situations like the hostel where communities are moving in there, and you end up with the problems we have. So that's the work that we're currently doing, looking at all regions, where there are hostels, who owns them, and what is the plan. So that's what we're doing. And then on the question of the bill and time frame, we've taken note of that. It's probably just the wording in English. It's clear in the departmental plan that this year the bill needs to come back to Parliament, and I think we're just signalling our intention that it's ready, and probably after this meeting we will have to submit the relevant documents for the committee's deliberations. Honourable Moss raised the question around training, which is very important. It's clear with everything that we talk about, it reverts back to training. And I want to link it back to the question of, the issue of having proper systems in place. And we're both working with all the entities. MQA is busy developing a proper system that will be linked to our system so that we can manage training properly. Because as much as the Act requires training to be done, the standards for that training and facilitation is done by MQA, the Mining Qualifications Authority, which is governed both by the Mine Health and Safety Act and the Skills Development Act that resides under MQA, although I chair also the Mining Qualifications Authority. But effectively what is happening, that system is developed on an annual basis. Mines are required by the Skills Development Act to submit the WSP Workplace Skills Plan to the MQA, and also at the end of the year to submit the annual training report, ATR, to say at the beginning of the year we've said we're going to train in this area, and at the end of the year this is what we've done. So that is happening. The problem is having those systems that are talking to each other, but currently, as I speak, those systems are well in development and the linkages are established. And I think in the future when we come back to report to the committee, we should have adequate information that talks to also training and development of workers. I think we've covered all the questions, Chair.
Good. That seems to be confirmed by members. But let's go back a bit. In your introduction, in your early slides, you repeatedly made mention of the fact that there is a legislative requirement for companies to do a pre-operations inspection. Now, do they keep records of that? The reason why we ask this is when we were at Impala mine, listening to the presentation by the company and the other stakeholders, it was quite clear that although the investigations are still going on, there might be a measure of negligence. Because that pre-inspection was done, indeed the hazardous condition was determined, and the miner basically decided to reinforce the pillage. And when the shift boss came around 3 hours thereafter, you know, took a different decision. That, look, your original decision was incorrect. In fact, you should have evacuated the workers from this area because this no amount of reinforcement would assist in preventing the fall of this ground, because they've identified completely that the joint was completely weakened, and as a result, you know, the cliff was hanging. Now the question begs in terms of whether they keep record, and is there somebody who would then be held liable in that instance, that you have said the work area is safe, and as a result of your decision, here we've got people that have died. I think we would need to spend some time on that. Secondly, as I think members have raised concerns about the, you know, continuous causes of accidents, you know, your rock falls, be it a seismic event, be it, you know, a fall of ground as a result of gravity inducement and so forth. But the fact remains is that you have got this major cause of fatal accidents in the mine. And indeed, you made reference to the fact that there is some research that is undertaken. Now, my question is, who is undertaking this research? Who is funding this process? It was many years. I mean, the comrade here says, her father, you know. And it's a similar situation when you hear people in the public generally raising these issues that my grandfather worked in the mines, this was the situation, and today it's still the situation, which begs that question in terms of the funding arrangements. Because if you commission a research and there's insufficient funding, you might as well forget. But also if you commission a research and it's done by an outside body with some vested interest, again, you know, you've lost the game from even before you played. So we need to understand clearly what are the mechanisms in as far as that is concerned. This leads me to yesterday's article on the report by a lady called, I think it was Ingit, something like to that effect, when she was bitterly complaining about the problem of silicosis in the mine, making reference to the fact that her grandfather worked in the mines and indeed you know, contracted silicosis, and that still today she still sees that there is a serious problem of the industry, you know, putting all sorts of
reasons as a defense in terms of this type of a disease, which, according to that article, that was something of, 80 years ago in the industry. And apparently she's making a point that her father was also a white miner, and it's worse when it comes to those general laborers who are mostly African on the ground. Now, the issue there in the main was the provisions of the Odimo, where there's a capping in terms of compensation. She says it's capped at about 84,000. I think we would like to react to that, and then also see whether there are plans to review Odimo so that it basically, assists us in dealing with this with this matter. Let me allow you to respond to those three, and then there are a couple of other areas that we would want to raise as well.
Before they respond, I'm also still on the issue of research that the questions have deliberated around. Also to indicate to us in terms of the reporting system, what I'm interested in knowing is how do we benefit out of the research work that has been done? How are their reporting systems monitored, and how regularly are they monitored for us to be able to say, for example, like you clearly put the report in terms of the statistics, the death rates, and so on. The same way new research that comes up, how closer is it bringing us to actually resolving some of the problems that are being experienced, like, for example, the very issue of Rockfall? The reporting systems to that, how much do they stress on that?
I think it's important to have all these reporting systems in place and that they overlap, of course. Otherwise, one cannot come to a reasonable deduction in the holding because it needs to be based on facts. But I think I omitted to ask, and we all seem to be of the view that we know exactly what Section 86 and 50 are all about, which is about to come back. Could you just come quickly state to us what these sections stated and why it's coming back? Just for the record, we all know what's happening. Thank you. Sorry.
Chairperson, I'm thinking about Section 60 because I don't have a note with me, it's drafted in a very legally technical language. But the issue really there was the section was saying that it was stating, duty holders, for example, CEOs, general managers will be held accountable. And that was really the big issue, because if you look at our legislation, it was changed over time to refer to an employer instead of individuals. And it was a contradiction, because really you're talking about an employer, and the act basically made employers immune to corporate liability in this country. But the responsibility was always referred to the employer. So the section was trying to say even the duty holders should, as much as Section 91 was giving responsibility to the corporate, but also the individual at operational level. Honourable Smith, I hope that addresses your concern.
I'm trying to follow. I'm not sure on what basis it's coming back. It's basically a phraseology issue, or was it basically issue of principle? Because I understand that there was some discussion about whether it would be prudent to have, let's say, the chief executive officer or the managing director of a board be found guilty of an offence, or is more about the phraseology, about the employer versus the management, which you then particularly indicate. I'm just trying to get what you're trying to say.
Maybe to assist you, I think the secretary indicated that there are copies of the amendment which should have been issued with the slides. and I think we'll have to just read. So mainly, I think your question revolves around section 86A, which reads thus. This is what deals with the criminal liability, basically. It says an employer, chief executive officer, manager, agent, or employee commits an offense if he or she contravenes or fails to comply with the provisions of this act, thereby causing a person's death or serious injury or serious illness to a person. And then it goes on to hold them criminally liable in the event of negligence. And of course, when you go to section 91, I think it's 91 subsection 6, deals with the penalties. The penalties which then would talk to an imposition of a fine or an imposition, firstly, is the suspension of the license, secondly, is the imposition of the fine, and thirdly, is the jail term, jail sentence, or the combination of both the fine and the jail sentence. Those are the areas that were seen to be, controversial. And depending on the stakeholders, some stakeholders were alluding to the fact that it's unconstitutional. Some were arguing that, no, it's not. It is within the bounds of the Constitution. And I think the presidency was sufficiently persuaded to allow a process which was already started by the Ministry of DME then and the Director General to bring back again the stakeholders on the table to basically iron out these two sections. And this is what the department is saying, that they are now ready, if I read you correctly. I heard you correctly. You are ready now to propose the necessary amendment. I think what we can do is to appeal to you that in the month of September, we'll be happy to receive such amendments and have enough time to also conduct public hearings and whatever processes that we must engage in. Because the key to those amendments are similar to what we are discussing around the question of research and finding preventative measures, but also combine that with measures that will serve as deterrent to the continuation of this situation until such time that those who are decision makers understand that they will be held personally and officially liable for their actions, particularly in instances of negligence. We won't be able to arrest this situation. So I think the process we have embarked upon will not be complete until that leg also is clarified and find a constitutionally acceptable, provision into the law. But you can respond to the other.
Yes, sir. The reason I seemed hesitant on the question is that I think it's a process issue, a parliamentary process issue, quite frankly. Our duty is to bring it back, and the committee can deliberate. And that's why I wasn't sure what I needed to comment on. The declaration of workplaces, we have Regulation 14 in the Mine Health and Safety Act, which requires specific individuals like miners to be trained to declare working places safe, and they need to record that declaration. When they come in, they look at the area, assess whether it's safe, and once they feel it's safe, they put it on record, sign for it, and allow people to go in. So I think the question was related specifically with the Impala issue. And I think that's the matter that we will pursue in the investigation and both the inquiry, because it came out very clearly that the problem was picked up and nine employees eventually suffered the fall of ground, which subsequently killed them. So there are legislative provisions that deals with that.
and it's recorded, Chair. I think the question was specifically whether they do that and is it recorded, and that it's adequately provided for in legislation. And just go into the Odima Koida issue. It's a matter we discussed recently also with the minister. And one of my comments, and I think I've raised it at the committee, it's a structural policy problem that we have. We have compensation regimes sitting in different departments, and in South Africa, our compensation system, it's a trade of rights type of system where people are not allowed to litigate companies because they are guaranteed compensation. And the biggest problem with our legislation currently is that there are those limits or caps, which are a problem, because when you start dealing with trade off of rights, you need to compensate people adequately. So we've identified that problem. And currently, Department of Labor is in the process of amending COIDA and basically doing away with ODIMO. That's the process that's underway to address the specific questions that Chair raised around the issue of compensation, and we'll be getting more and more involved to specifically address the questions relating to minors, because we will know that this legislation covers all industries, and probably they might lack when they deal with specific situations facing minors in the country. So I think I'll leave it at that point. And then just looking at the research, our research is conducted by, for the most part, is done by Council for Industrial Research, Science and Industrial Research, CSIR, which is a public entity. So the bulk of our research is conducted there. There was a question of who's doing research and how is it funded. Regulation 35, Chapter 35 of our regulation makes provision to determine the risk levels of operations. And how we've done it in the past is to look at injuries and deaths, and on the basis of that have a risk profile for mines. And on the basis of that risk profile, we charge mines levies. Mines pay levies annually. We collect levies of around 50 million a year, and that money is committed purely to research, and it's managed by the Mine Health and Safety Council. So they enter into research contracts with CSIR, NIO, and other bodies to do the relevant and necessary research for the mining industry. And this is one of the issues we've addressed when we were amending the legislation, because we were raising that very question for the rand value of money we spend on research. I mean, we've been conducting research for quite some time now, and the challenge was really how you source researchers, and it was also related to governance issue. Council is a very small body. I mean, it's got about 18 staff, really acting as a secretariat for council meetings, and at the same time, they're beset with the governance issues, compliance, PFMA, and because of those issues, we tended to run, this year you must approve the research program. It needs to start. So it was that whole cycle. And because of that cycle, not sufficient time was spent on understanding the problems and committing money to proper research. And that's what we're correcting currently. also with the review of the legislation, to say when we do research, you must be able to link it to the problem, because research is about finding answers to problems. And if you fail to come up with a proper research question, therein lies the problem. You will do research for sake of doing research. And researchers are very interesting creatures. They always want money to do research. And as a body running research, you need to know the problems you're facing. And I think there's been a gap in that particular area, which we've outlined a research process, how it needs to happen, when it needs to be approved, so that we're sure that we're committing money to the actual problems and we're able to deal with the challenges. So I think that covers the questions. Chair, reporting questions on reporting. The Mine Health and Safety Council report to the department, and annually it comes to the committee to present. So sometime this year, I'm sure the committee will be engaging with the council and questions around what they are doing, what research and detailed discussion on the research process could be pursued.
Members, I know that we have not exhausted questions. For instance, I have a follow-up on this matter of funding of the research, as well as the international trends in terms of the rate of fatalities. How do we compare to other countries? But I see that tea has arrived. Let's just take a 5-10 minute break and then come back to exhaust our discussion.
Add value in another way, and I mean in the mining, and they want to add value in another way. And there was that sort of respect. And now your inspectors, you're sourcing younger and younger people, and in those hardcore and trained mining operations like gold, platinum, there's just a sense of inspectors, who are they? They're too young. What do they know? So you have to deal with those and manage those type of issues. But when you look at operations like coal, diamond, relationships are very different. So it differs from one commodity to another. If I answer that.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I think we're towards the end. But I wonder if before we could, attend the meeting, let's go back to the slide that deals with the causes of accidents and the nature thereof, so that we can agree in terms of what nature of accidents and fatalities that lead to the pact. You're looking at the fall of ground. You will correct us if we're right in this instance, because we must categorize this. You're looking at the fall of ground, followed by this general, incidents and accidents, followed by the transport and mining, and then you would have your machinery, and finally the explosive in terms of the top five in my own analysis. But I think we need to confirm that so that when we engage the council in terms of the research work that they are doing, we need them to concentrate on, are they doing something in these areas that seem to be leading the pack in terms of the occupational safety. But firstly, I mean, let me hear the views of other members. Those would be the top five in my own view, but if I've missed some of the numbers, alarming numbers, figures, then you would then assist me there, so that when the department goes away, when the council comes before us, then they are able to talk us through this. The intention on this was, we're going to look at the safety, we're going to look at the occupational diseases, and we're going to look at the commodities or factors that contribute most in this situation. Really, the main intention is for us this time around to deal decisively with these accidents and fatalities. We know that we might not be able to totally eliminate, but we basically must walk a long road towards the reduction, serious reduction, close to eradication of these accidents. And it's doable. My own view is that a number of these, causes are preventable. I'll tell you why when we have a great discussion on which ones constitute. Members, are you with us in terms of that categorization?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then if we look at the occupational diseases, can you go back to that slide? Yes. You've got parliamentary TB. It is a pulmonary TB.
Pulmonary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then what is that NHL?
It's
noise-induced hearing loss, followed by silicosis. That will be your top three. Okay. And that SITB, what is that?
Silico TB.
How does this silico TB differ from the pulmonary TB? Because I think the question was asked here by one of the members in terms of the pre-employment examination, where people will be given a clean bill of health. And during the course of their employment and at exit, then they show the development of such disease. Now, but then what's the difference between the two? Why would that one stand alone and you have the one linked to silicosis, particularly in gold, because that's where mainly you get the silicosis.
We might not be able to provide the answer. I think when we visit the committee next time, we have to bring the medical inspector who will testify and then place it for us. Except that silico TB is, there's this marriage now between TB and silicosis, which really complicates the treatment of TB. Generally, TB in the mining industry is being that pulmonary TB, but now where there's silica dust, you have a different strain of the disease, and then that separation.
The reason why I'm asking this is that, let's take the case of asbestos. Before it was accepted by the industry that asbestos is a hazardous substance, in your late 70s, early 80s, when the unions really grappled with this situation, almost quite a number of people who suffered asbestosis were basically diagnosed by the company doctors as having TB. And in this instance, you have purely pulmonary TB, which normally is associated with lifestyles and other causes, separating it from silicosis.
Mm.
Whereas people in their pre-examination, they show no signs of TB.
Mm.
In their work environment, where they are exposed to silica dust, then they then show the contraction of the TB. I'm worried about that because that seems to be the one that is higher than any other occupational related disease. And I know that also this was quite a serious debate before it was accepted that TB in the mining industry is also an occupational, related disease. But that separation, to me, seems to be playing down the effect of the silica in terms of the occupational diseases. But if you can't answer that because of, you know, you still need some medical practitioners. But I think it's a question that we would want when you come back, it must be unpacked. So that we can't solve the problem if it's hidden behind other problems. Also married to that, you might find out that the increase in HIV/AIDS status in the mining industry would be attributed to that pulmonary, you know, TB.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think these are things that we need to really, you know, unpack so that you separate
mm-hmm.
your general, you know, health situation from the occupational so that we can be able to address and solve the problem
yeah.
in terms of occupation. Members, do we agree that those would be the, at the moment? Although you have not put in the asbestos or the slow. Okay. Okay. All right. Any other disease that we that might have been left out in the industry? Okay. Let's then go to the commodities and see which commodities are contributing more. It would appear that gold, followed by platinum and coal. Now, when in terms of the other, it's going to be difficult for us to comprehend with, because there you're saying all other minerals, such as diamond, chrome, yeah, okay. I think we would need to see from that other, which is more of a general, what basically accounts for what. For us to can be able, but the top three would be those gold, platinum, and coal. Would that be the case? Okay, then, yes.
Sorry, Chair, in terms of the other, perhaps it would be good to also see the figures, even if they are zero figures. But the fact that those are existing mines and they're operational, that one could also, in a way, be proactive in keeping records. You might just be able to identify uncertain trends in terms of that, that in future, when we have such a presentation, the other must be indicated, especially for people with little knowledge, like us in the area. It might not seem of any use now, but you something could come out of it.
Yes?
We will certainly do that just with a bit of caution. I mean, we're mining 35 commodities. The other smaller ones, we've just classified them under that. And just showing them would probably be 2 pages. But we can maybe just group them in a way that you see the main contributors to the.
Thank you, honorable members. And I think, as we had indicated, that we would want, you know, to be assisted through this process. That when you come back after. You have gone through the formative stage and the planning stage so that we are able to then begin to talk timeline in terms of finding preventative measures, first and foremost. Because when it comes to the accident, the fatalities, as well as the occupational diseases, surely there are solutions, including engineering solutions, and that one of the considerations that we could give would be to look at the contribution of the mining industry. The question that I would pose, would it be burdensome if we look at possibilities of imposing a percentage of the revenue of the mining companies individually, irrespective of their record of safety, that must be set aside by those companies to make a contribution on health and safety, you know, matters. If they want to manage those budgets, if it's 1%, if it's 0.5%, or whatever, but the principle, so that then every year when we visit companies, then we can see how has that money been spent on health and safety issues, particularly on preventative measures, over and above what you are collecting for research purposes. And secondly, we would want the department to really quantify the required funding for research. It might not be more than the 50 million rand per annum that you are getting. It might be more. But I think the intention here must be to look at international best practices. The reason why we pose the question on international benchmarking is because you made mention of some of your team currently being in Queensland at some stage to understand some of the processes. And indeed, Australia, the United Kingdom, are some of the countries that emerge as countries that have got best practices, and hence their rate of accidents and fatalities are low. Now, but the irony is that when the same multinational companies who are operating in those countries come to South Africa, they lower the standard. And which could be, you know, an answer to why we have such high levels of accidents and fatalities. And indeed, we need not be ashamed to basically find mechanisms to compel them to maintain those standards. If they are operating in Australia on particular standards, then they must do the same when they come to the country. I'm saying, therefore, that researching might not be a cumbersome process, because already there exist technologies in these countries that can assist us. For instance, when you talk about the fall of ground, you know, in one company we were told that this was as a result of gravity-induced fall of ground, and no seismic event was basically did basically take place there. But everybody and anybody should anticipate that the laws of gravity are always with us. You know, the force of gravity is always there. That if you raise something high, the force of gravity will pull it down. If you dig something from below, seriously, that will be the situation. But I think when we were in that company, what we were happy about is to see that the method of production was changed immediately after that major accident. And that kind of attitude from that company made us to feel, you know, strong that indeed in the industry there are those who want to better the situation. Because immediately when they changed that method of operation in terms of decreasing even the size of the operation area in terms of the length, I think it was from 3 meters to what, 2 meters? From 14 to, yes. Sorry? 14 to 6. Yes. Now, indeed, it tells you that once people apply their minds, there are preventative measures that could be put in place, particularly when then the motive is not maximizing production, but to also look at health and safety matters. I think we were saying this, that we can prevent these accidents, even if we are not going to be able to eliminate them totally. So looking at such examples, drawing such experiences, and applying them in the industry, then we can see a reduction, a serious reduction in terms of this. But then it means that the companies also must be prepared to spend on health and safety matters. On the other hand, I think also, as members have raised, by September, we would need to see that amendment being brought before us so that we can then engage with it and take a final position on the matter. Now, I don't know whether by September you would have gone through your planning stage in terms of the implementation when you come back with the bill. Could we expect that maybe we can engage more on these areas as well?
Thanks, Chair. September, I think it will be too early. As I indicated earlier, I mean, the bill was signed already into the new financial year. We've laid plans, we're working, but September will just be too early. I'm thinking with a lot of the implementation, we're doing everything we can so that we start the next financial year fully. We've put budgetary requests for the new programs and all that. So September will be too early for that.
What would be the reasonable period? The reason why I'm asking these questions is that the fourth parliament has been declared as an activist parliament, which means we are working towards a 70% time spent on oversight and only 30% time spent on legislative processes. That's a proposal that we are working on, so that once it gains the support of all parties involved in parliament, that's the direction that we would want to take, which means we will be more out there. And when we're out there, these tools will be put before us so that we can then test, the impact that they make. So what would be a reasonable time?
Chair, you mean with the implementation of the entire legislation? As I indicated, our plans was to implement them fully, other than the guidelines developing, but the actual implementation to start it fully at the beginning of April next year. That's the plan we laid down.
Can we not speed it up in some way? Because the accidents are continuing as we speak.
At least the document. You said to us the document is ready, isn't it? It's just for you to present it to the committee.
Well, the legislation is just that's ready. We can bring it in September. I'm thinking about the implementation, actual
Sorry, Chair. For us to be able to move forward from this point onwards, we'll need to have that piece of legislation first. We'll try to look at it as a committee as well and deliberate on that.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that if, say, the document is there already,
no,
before end of September, we can't be having it.
That can be done, Chair, by the end of September.
Okay. I think that concludes our business. Let's thank the department very much. We're hoping to see you next week on your five-year plan. I hope the communication has gone through in that regard. And but thank you very much for responding to our request to come through. And let me thank the honourable members for their contribution. Surely these robust engagements would be the business of the day every time we meet. Until we meet next week, thank you very much.
I think I'm not going to forget to switch off.